Dave Hodges here, host of the Common Sense Show. We are the show that is freeing America one enslaved mind at a time. And we're going to be talking about some unreported activity in Haiti that's major, but they've managed to keep it out of the mainstream media, but they can't keep it out of the Common Sense Show. And we got Sam Arnold here to talk to us about it. And we're going to update you some on what's going on with Brazil. I've got a few tidbits. I'm sure Sam has way more than that. And we're going to hit that. But first, I need to let you know, with the Democrats moving more firmly in control, plus me, all the rhinos that are in the House, there was no election that was won there. The agenda will continue. And you want to trust Biden as he takes away your food? Klaus Schwab, addressing the G20 today, says, we're changing everything. And he's talking about your food. He's talking about your electricity. He's talking about your car. So, ladies and gentlemen, don't leave things to chance. Right now, My Patriot Supply has a $250 off special on the three-month emergency kit. Get one for each member of your family. Restaurant-quality food, lots of diversity, breakfast, lunch, dinner, 2,000 calories per day, 25-year shelf life. Go to preparewithdave.com. That's preparewithdave.com. And then one more thing I want to throw at you here in this particular segment is I'm afraid we're going to see grid down across areas in the United States, and it's not even so much due to terrorism. We can't keep the grid going with the demands that are going to be placed upon it due to Biden's failed energy policies. And if the grid stays down for any length of time, you're going to have to scavenge water. Do you have a good water filter? Well, we do. We have the best in the industry, the Alexa Pure Pro water filter. The prices have not gone up. There's also a sale, and I would highly recommend you go to waterwithdave.com. So we got you covered with the food, preparewithdave.com. We got you covered with the water, okay, waterwithdave.com. And now we have Sam Arnold with Dave. Sam, welcome to the show, and no shortage of things to talk about in the Southern Hemisphere. What's going on?
Hey, Dave, to speak a little bit of Spanglish, good morning, good afternoon, good night. It's a pleasure to be with you. And we have to crack the ice with a couple jokes because it's very serious going on.
I appreciate that, Sam. We do. Exactly right.
It's an old preacher's trick before we punch somebody in the gut.
Yes, so, I should say Pastor Sam Arnold here. Sometimes I forget to say that. He's a man of the cloth. And so I think this colors what Sam says a lot. In fact, I don't think I know. So I think it gives him more credibility than some others. But anyway, Sam, what's going on? You sent me something that was pretty distressing regarding Haiti, and it's being kept out of the mainstream media.
A few outlets reported on it, but I had not come across it on any major feeds. I really hope that maybe Steve Quayle will pick this up and link to it, because it's extremely important. The United States, the U.S. Embassy convoy was fired upon in a gunfire ambush in Port-au-Prince, Haiti. And this just happened Monday of this week, so it's days ago. And there was an injury. One of the Haitian drivers was injured. And if we do a little bit more of a tactical breakdown on that, then we'll talk about how that happened and why it happened. But this is not a one-off occurrence. This was a gunfire ambush. And generally, U.S. State Department convoys are armored vehicles. They generally run O'Gara, Hess, and Eisenhart manufactured or modified FAVs, fully armored vehicles that are rifle-rated against 308 and 30-06. So there is some defense against this, and there is some preparation for it around the world. In fact, the number one consumer of armored vehicles in the world, armored civilian-type vehicles, is the United States State Department. So there is some preparation for this, but the fact that this gunfire ambush happened, that the U.S. convoy was fired upon, and there was an injury to a Haitian driver, is mind-boggling news. So a little bit of background on why this would happen. After being an experiment for more than a decade, a lot of people don't know that there was an earthquake 60 years after the Full Gospel Businessmen did a major gospel crusade in Port-au-Prince, 60 years to the month. Now, that nation had political upheavals before and after that, It was the famous dictator, Papadoc Duvalier.
Yeah, who, I remember him, yes.
Yes, he was pressured from three different sides. One was the Catholic Church, one was rebellions within his own country, and one was the United States. And Senator, Haitian Senator Arthur Sothsman, hand-delivered an invitation to my friend and mentor, Clayton Sonmore, who told me the story from his own mouth after I had read what he'd authored about it. He received the invitation with the presidential seal and signed by President Papadoc Duvalier. And he, with State Department approval, by the way, flew to Haiti. He was the only guest in the central hotel, the deluxe hotel there. He was the only foreign guest and under armed guard at all times. He flew into Haiti over the United States Navy Armada, which was waiting right over the horizon from the island of Haiti to...
Why? Tell us why that's significant.
The island of Hispaniola, which is half Haiti and half the Dominican Republic. It is significant because the United States Navy was about to invade. So this is 60 years before the earthquake to the month. And I don't want to get the years wrong. I've reported on it. But even before the earthquake happened in this century, the Clinton Foundation was heavily at work doing social engineering programs, Pavlov Institute-type programs, UN-type camps, education grants and money where they moved their propaganda in. They were working very hard in Haiti. And then the earthquake hit. And the earthquake was, for the Clinton Foundation, it was just absolutely a bonanza.
Because they got UN money? Is that what you're saying?
Money from all around the world. And okay. NGO money and government aid. Movies. You know, this is when every nation brings out their warships to do a humanitarian relief mission. And so they get the practice at the same time. They get faction in the world. Hey, look what we're using our Navy and our warships for. Sure, they're full of guns and bullets and missiles and stuff. And we land aircraft on them to bomb the hell out of places. But we also send out helicopters to do relief and so forth. So all different nations' navies do that, but none more than the U.S. Navy. And so all of that aid was coming in, and the Clinton Foundation and the corrupt CIA/Clinton spook world was already entrenched there. And so now we have a whole generation that's grown up under this. And being, the Haitian migrants coming through are a serious issue and a problem. And I've had to stand in line with them myself, being a refugee. I go stand in line with, I got a selfie of myself. I'll send it to you, Dave, of myself standing outside of the refugee office in Mexico City by the federal government, and just a sea of black Haitians. And it's very rare to see a person of African origin, African roots in Mexico. Mexico has like, about 3% mixed African, Afro-Mexicans in certain areas. But normally, if I see a black person, it's an American, and I'm going to get to speak English. So I actually get excited about it. This was before the Haitian way. So right now, there is a security crisis for the nation of Mexico because of the Haitian instability and because the latest wave of a couple of years in Haiti has been to just send boat after boatload of so-called refugees to Mexico. So now the Mexican government is involved, and we'll touch that in a minute. Right now I want to say that there are armed groups in Haiti, and it appears to me, I am asking whether this is the voice of people who truly want to be free and who truly want to be out from under the thumb of the CIA and the Clinton Foundation. And just to drop a few clues about that, you know, Jimmy Barbecue is the rebel leader who has been sanctioned by the U.S. and the United Nations. And his last name is a French root. It's cherisier. It is spelled with an R on the end. I think you say cherisier. Jimmy Barbecue Cherisier. Now, he was a police officer, not just a line officer. He was in the government security forces. And he was very close to President Moise, who was assassinated. We just passed the one-year anniversary of President Moise's assassination. And remember, this is one of three presidents in the world that openly came out and said, we are not going to mandate a shot to our population that's untested, that's suspect. We're not going to do an emergency declaration to authorize it and force it on the people. We're not going to do it. President Moise of Haiti was one of three presidents that did that and then was openly killed, openly assassinated. I mean, gunfire attack and assault on his presidential residence, which, by the way, smacked of U.S. Merc work.
Of course.
Blackwater type, CIA type wet work team. So Jimmy Barbecue Cherisier was very close to Moise, and Moise felt that Cherisier's apparently, and this has been reported here and there just in the little tidbits that I've got in different places. Now, MSN.com did do an article on this, and if you search Haiti embassy attack or embassy convoy attack, you'll get it. But we need to sound the alarm that this happened. And I just want to tell you why this is significant. When the conquistadors came into Mexico, the Mexican people had never seen an armored knight, especially with a firearm. And so here come the conquistadors. A lot of the primitive peoples of Mexico, there were great civilizations too, but a lot of the primitive people of Mexico did not understand that that was a human astride of a beast. To them, it appeared one giant anthropomorphic monster that was armored and impregnable. Until one day, somebody took a shot and actually made one of those caballeros, those horsemen, bleed. The Spanish horsemen bled, and the people saw the blood. And then they got this crazy idea. If it bleeds, we can kill it.
Yeah, okay, I got it. Let's bring us up to the future, to the present, though. What's going on with Haiti that concerns Mexico specifically, and what actions is AMLO considering, is he considering taking?
Okay, there has been presented before the United Nations a request for authorization for a non-UN, so not UN peacekeepers, for a non-UN military multinational effort to go into Haiti and to restore order. And if Mexico were to lead that, that would be a real shocker, because the Mexican Constitution has numerous safeguards to keep Mexico out of foreign wars, European wars, this conquest. Mexico is very isolationist, and the president can order the defense of Mexico's waters or borders or reallocation of troops within the nation very easily, along with the Secretary of Defense and certain officials. But for there to be Mexican troops sent,
hello everybody, the wounded
soil, it requires acts of Congress. Like
warrior
really
here
requires acts of Congress. Not like in the U.S. where we say it requires an act of Congress and then we bomb and put all kinds of soldiers everywhere. Anyway, without that, it requires serious activity by vote by the representatives of the people in Mexico City.
Okay.
And so Mexico is addressing this, and the Mexico and the U.S. co-authored the resolution that went to the United Nations. So I thought to myself, of course the U.N. wants to be in Haiti. They want to be in Venezuela. They want to set up their camps and then get their prostitution going, and their, which then becomes, it goes from sex trafficking to child trafficking to permanent UN camps. I've studied it in Uganda and other places, and they really want that badly in the Americas. But Mexico, if Mexico went in, it would be an entirely different situation. And this is where you and I have talked, Dave, about Mexico stepping into the power vacuum left when the United States has been pulling aid, the aid that would actually be productive,
right,
to the different countries like Guatemala and El Salvador. You know, Trump made sure he signed the Build Act, Better Use Investment Dollars. The Build Act made sure that the millions that we send to a country like Guatemala or El Salvador actually pay judges, immigration processing centers, pay for housing of migrants while they're in an actual trial for asylum claims to be heard and determine whether or not it's got validity, et cetera, et cetera. So the money was going to things like that and not into huge NGOs, which are going to back violent gangs, trafficking gangs, criminal activity, graft, and malfeasance and theft. And so now we got Biden to the White House. It's gone right back to that. And who swings the quickest? The State Department, the U.S. State Department. In fact, Trump called it the Deep State Department. Just shouted that out on stage for all the world to hear. You want to know where the deep state lives? It lives in the U.S. State Department.
Yeah, I used to have a really good friend named Monica Wesolowski who worked for the State Department, and I got a bird's eye view. They hated her because she was conservative, and she told me dozens of stories. You're right. The State Department's totally communist, and really for the most part they have been. Remember Alger Hiss and the U.N. and that fiasco? They've always been this way.
And over recent years, it's gotten worse, and they have worked harder. You know, Tano Pirano, who, by the way, comes from my strain of the martial arts. There's an interesting video, if anybody's interested. It's one of the earliest videos that I did, is Chris Tano Pirano wins Master Bussi's ARC Award. It's on my YouTube channel. And it was actually Chris Tano Pirano who insisted on calling me Pastor Sam, although I had long rejected honorifics. You know, I just wanted to not get into that. I preached in the jungles and on the streets and really didn't want a public face and people calling me. You know, Jesus reproved the Pharisees. They love greetings in the marketplaces and to be called rabbi. So I'd resisted that for 20 years, even though I preached and been to many nations and have been set apart by multiple presbyteries with the laying on of hands to do the Lord's work. I really rejected the honorific, but when Tano Pirano on a worldwide broadcast, he and I were talking, and he just insisted on calling me Pastor Sam. And so that stuck. And that's it. If anybody's got a problem with people calling me pastor, then you could just go to Chris Tano Pirano, the hero of Benghazi, who killed over 100 insurgents in the famous 13 hours firefight, along with a very few buddies that stuck with him. And you can take it up with him. So we honor the heroism of those men attempting to save the life of Ambassador Chris Stevens and save the rest of the Americans that were left to die by Hillary Clinton and her control of the State Department in Benghazi, Libya. But we also know in hindsight that Ambassador Chris Stevens was heavily involved in the gun running operation.
Well,
that was
not just that. So Sam, gun running, child running, drug running, he did the trifecta.
And he was about to spill the beans, some say.
Well, yeah. Can I give – this is something I know a lot about because I got proprietary information, and I'm not bragging, but I was the first to break the story about Benghazi. It was almost a coup, and Chris Stevens knew he was being hung out to dry to kill all the connections to the Hillary Clinton State Department when Obama was going to run for re-election against Mitt Romney. And so he asked for a platoon of Marines. She said no. How about a squad? Hillary said no. He knew he was being set up to be killed. He even put out the word to a few people, and he knew they were going to come and take him out. Now, at that event, you had General Hamm, head of AFRICOM, and you had an admiral, the head of Carrier Threat Task Force 3, and they were wise to what was going on, and they hated the Obama administration. They would like to have saved Stevens, because he'd have sung like a canary knowing he was being hung out to dry. So they were under attack, Ham and the Admiral were communicating, and they said, okay, Admiral, I'll provide the cover, air cover and surveillance with drones, and Ham was going to provide the troops to come in and save the day, and they were going to rescue Stevens and have him sing like a canary and try to bring down the Biden administration. Unknown to both commanders, Panetta, the defense secretary, had staffed their XOs, their number two in command, with CIA operatives, and when they moved to disobey Panetta's order to disengage from the event, they were promptly arrested, and it stopped Stevens from being saved. That's the backstory, but there almost was a coup over this. It could have brought down the Biden administration.
And then after that, when those men actually shot their way out of the country in the famous 13 hours firefight, they got back to the USA only to find that Hillary's goons were after them, and they had to use all their trade craft. They had to go dark. They had to use burner phones. They had to hide out away from their families and go on the run in order to preserve their own lives and to tell the story. And then when Paramount Pictures picked it up, this had been through a couple different movie houses, turned down the script, but Paramount picked it up, made the story, and it's a fantastic, fantastic story of American heroism. But looking back, even the guys that were there realized that the white shoe boys, the CIA people, had gotten them into a pickle that was going to endanger all of their lives. If you look at the book, I have a book called Zero Footprint is the title, and that book details that the wet work teams that were running out, this is just the guns that were going from there onto C-130s into Syria and so forth, there were not less than 10 different outfits. These are different warlord-led factions that were multi-hundred million. Average $300 million U.S. dollars of weapons went through each one of these 10 different competing warlord factions to try to move all those guns into Syria. Of course, now Congress just passes it by the tens of billions one month after another, and we don't even try to hide it through a third country anymore. So this is a sliding down the slippery slope, and I'd like to commend again the heroism of those Americans that saved themselves and the other Americans. But now people in their positions, I'd like you to consider, if you are a knuckle dragger working to protect the CIA and the State Department, I would challenge you to remember your oath you took when you joined the United States military to defend this nation against all enemies, foreign and domestic. And that you may be tacked on to defend an outfit that is going to put you in danger and put our nation in danger right now as we're under a threat of nuclear war. And more nations of the world are going to consider this event. And this is why there's a news blackout. You know, you never see a story about somebody killing a U.S. police officer in self-defense. You know who shot a cop in self-defense in the USA and got away with it and didn't go to prison, Dave? Tupac Shakur. Now, that was in the 90s. But if, and I will assure you that it happens, but if the word out that a United States American red-blooded citizen, somebody who slings a hammer or sits at a desk every day, was in an assault situation, somebody got in a conflict with them and they use lethal force, and then in searching the dead guy's pockets, once they flipped them over, they found a badge. If that hit the news, all of a sudden it could start a groundswell in America that maybe all the king's horses and all the king's men could not stop. And that's why there's a news blackout here about this Haiti convoy attack, because blood has...
Yeah, excuse me.
State Department. And the State Department is so dangerous that even in Mexico, in a document dump in the last few months, it was found out that U.S. Ambassador Ken Salazar has been under government surveillance. So this is the security apparatus, the intelligence apparatus within the Mexican military has been surveilling very carefully U.S. Ambassador Ken Salazar. Well, did you know that he was Hillary Clinton's transition director? Once Madam President stole the election in 2016, the guy that was going to run the whole transition team was former Obama Department of the Interior cabinet head, Ken Salazar.
Yeah, but so he's now a, here he's we a are piece of work,
2022,
Sam.
And the moment that Obama, the moment that Biden got in the White House, guess what? Hillary's transition team head came to Mexico City to be the new ambassador. And he speaks Spanish. He's one of the few leftists that's all for big oil, you know, drilling and making money, which is something that the U.S. and U.S. interests always try to do in Mexico, is come get the oil, because Mexico has a vast amount of oil. So he's one of the few that does that. And I'd just like to point out that he is absolutely a dedicated socialist, and having failed in 2016 to hand over the United States of America to China, he was sent recently to Mexico to hand Mexico over to Chinese and globalist interests. So it's no surprise that he is out there being watched. The government of Oklahoma, the governor of Oklahoma, Kevin Stitt, who's a Republican and a fair guy, he's just a tough guy, they put a 40-man protective team on him. Because what did he do? Flew down, went straight to the U.S. Embassy on Paseo de la Reforma, right underneath of the Angel of Independence, El Ángel de la Independencia in Mexico City. And then here's the State Department, here's the deep state, telling, oh, hey, you got a lot of oil in your state. Hey, let's work out a deal for this. You know, your state really needs workers. Let's work out a deal for this. So they're all trying to schmooze Governor Kevin Stitt, who's one of the key people. Should United U.S. states secede, Oklahoma is going to be the first or the second state. And Texas doesn't have any leadership, as we've discussed before. One quick point on that, and then I'm interested in your commentary, Dave. Oklahoma is key to any secession in the United States. And here's the State Department just greasing palms and schmoozing Kevin Stitt. So the governor of Texas, Greg Abbott, who just won a totally gerrymandered and very suspect contest, is looking forward to a new term as the governor. And Greg Abbott of Texas, Ken Salazar, the U.S. ambassador in Mexico City, are the two highest profile American officers that have entertained personally ex-governor of Tamaulipas State, Francisco Garcia Cabeza de Vaca, the worst criminal in the Western Hemisphere, who right now is on the lam. His whereabouts are unknown. And so Ken Salazar deserves to be surveilled. He's not working for the interests of Mexico, and he's not working for the interests of the actual United States. He is absolutely a pawn and a stooge for the deep state, the deep State Department, the CIA, neoliberalist Bush interests, and the Clinton, Obama, Biden left in the United States. So we can expect more trouble against this obvious enemy of democracy in the new world.
Well, okay, the Haiti thing is unsettling, and Mexico is going to move, but I don't see that as a threat to the U.S., do you?
The unrest in Haiti is a major threat to the U.S., because I can walk down the street along the border or in Mexico City or many other places and see 20, 22, 23-year-old, very strong, muscle-bound men with horrible, mean scowls on their face and generally a few scars and busted knuckles to let you know that their mean expression is not a bluff. These are people that have been, from their infancy, raised in refugee camps. a lot of them speak Spanish because they spent years in Chile in the process of overthrowing that nation, which is now leftist controlled, although a resistance is rising. And a lot of them burned or discarded their Chilean identifications, which would preclude their entry to the U.S.
United States, yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's right. But they just throw away their country of origins, roots. Okay, but I'm still not convinced how Mexico go. I understand it's a security threat when they attack embassy personnel. I get that. That's a terrible thing. And certainly, well, let me ask you this question. Why would the American media be interested in covering up the attack on embassy personnel from the United States?
So it doesn't happen again. So it doesn't happen 20 more times. So every country that the U.S. is in there trying to overthrow and run a coup, like it happened in Ukraine, Chile, pues, Argentina, many other places, like they're trying to do right now in Brazil. What if the Brazilians heard about this, that somebody shot up the U.S. convoy and that somebody was actually injured and that the U.S. State Department was scared about it?
Okay, I hear what you're saying. And they don't want to give them attention, too, because it'll increase the likelihood of the behavior getting more attention, so it'll reoccur. I get that. Okay, that makes sense. But I don't have a problem with Mexico moving into Haiti. In fact, I would say better them than us.
I'm starting to really like this idea, and it's a stunning thing that perhaps the president would take that before Congress. And I have not read the resolution, but the resolution did pass out of a 15-member UN committee, and it's not a UN force. You know, if it were a UN force, then you'd be dealing with a lot of other suspect nations. You'd be dealing with China just first. You'd be dealing with a lot of very socialist Europeans. But right now, the fact that it will be a multinational non-UN force, it could actually be the solution to the crisis in Haiti and the resulting refugee crisis. Because the moment there's stability, then the government's going to reach out to all the Haitians in Mexico and say, all right, you came because it wasn't safe there. Now it's safe. And we're going to even give you a boost. But you need to go home and rebuild your own nation, and we'll help you do it. So that's what's actually on the platter. But I'll tell you what the globalist government of Haiti wants. First of all, the prime minister is refusing to resign. Jimmy Barbecue wants the prime minister to resign. I'm going to read something just from Prime Minister Ariel Henry. So there is demonstrations of thousands of people in Haiti going out to the streets to demand the resignation of Prime Minister Ariel Henry. You know what Barbecue suggested? He suggested, okay, we're going to have all the armed factions in Haiti, 9 or 10 of them. Each one will have a representative, and that council will govern the nation until the presidential election in 2024, which that's only 2 years. Now, what's unreasonable about that? All right, someone would say, and this may be the slant by the AP and MSN, the little reporting that happened on this convoy shooting, it says that the same gang that did the convoy shoot up was responsible for kidnapping the American missionaries. So that was a widely known event that happened. They were held, I believe, 2 or 3 months in captivity, and I'm sure that was a harrowing and terrifying thing. Having myself been held captive by a communist army as a missionary, it is a nerve-wracking experience. So I'm not sure if that's true, but they say, okay, it's the same gang that kidnapped the missionaries that did the shoot-up. But the fact is,
okay,
I see Haiti fighting for its survival through Joseph Lambert and Jimmy Barbecue Cherizier. Prove me wrong.
Well, okay, but the thing is, I would say this, okay? It's destabilizing to Mexico what's going on. But the destabilization is already at our southern border, so it's not going to spread. The attack on our embassy personnel is concerning. And I would say just pull out of Haiti and let them figure out their own mess. That would be my answer. Problem solved. What I'd like to do, though, in the time we have left, is there's been developments out of Brazil that I think are very telling. And the military came out with two statements that impugned the use of voting machines. And so I wanted to ask you about this. Do you see the military moving in the direction of intervention, given the fact they've now taken a position on the election? And I'm talking about Bolsonaro's defeat to the communist Chinese and radical leftist candidate Lula, that he somehow has managed to steal the election. That seems to be gaining traction with the Brazilian military, not to mention hundreds of thousands of people in Brazil.
Let me give a tiny bit of background that is just going to make this all so clear what's happening in Brazil. The same thing happened in Brazil that happened to Trump in the midterms here in the U.S.
Yeah, Trump exactly.
He backed all these candidates, some of which were kind of out of left field. But with Trump's backing, many of them rose to prominence. And then, regardless of who shuffled and cut and shuffled again the deck, a number of them won. And so then after winning, do you know what many of them did? Cozied right up to the GOP, to the RINOs, to Mike Pence, and turned their back on President Trump, who made them. The same thing. And this is a gut punch, because under the radar, behind the scenes, in the smoke-filled rooms, these arrangements were made where the globalists come to this candidate and say, all right, we know this about you, we'll help you, we'll back you, but the moment you take your seat, you turn on Trump. And many of them did. And Trump was really hurt by that. He finally came out and declared his candidacy, and that's great. I see armed conflict before there's another election, but regardless, he finally declared, and that's fantastic. And there's one of them, is DeSantis. Now there's issues between Trump and DeSantis, but DeSantis is receiving money from some very suspect interests that have donated to the leftists in the past. And then so him cozying up to the RINOs and intending to have a title bout with Don Jay for the White House. This is why there's friction, because he's cozying up to the RINOs and may have been one the whole time. So Trump had to call him out. All right, so this is a gut punch for Trump, that he backed all these candidates, made them, gave them brand equity from his brand, and then they kick off those shoes and change horses, to mix metaphors. This happened in Brazil, Dave. Many candidates that Jair Bolsonaro backed for, that he gave his power and influence to, that he endorsed for governorships, Senate seats, representative seats, mayoral elections, many of them won and then denounced his movement. So they win the seat, and then the same night make a phone call to congratulate Lula da Silva on his quote victory. So this is what's happening. And we have to ask, if there is suspect shuffling of the deck or of the ballots, were those so-called conservatives allowed to win or made to win because it was prearranged that they would then turn against the tropical Trump,
yeah,
or the actual John J. Trump?
Tropical Trump is Bolsonaro, for people who don't know. But I want to tell you something here. I have been asked this question today by people I know, and they say, Dave, what's a bigger problem in America's elections? Is it, what is it? I say, well, voting fraud certainly present, clear and present danger. But the biggest danger we have is the infestation of RINOs that now run the Republican Party, both at the national and state level. And I've gone through painstakingly today on YouTube, and I've identified who these people are. And I'll just briefly say, in Arizona, for example, Bill Gates, chairman, supervisor of Maricopa County, not the Bill Gates of Microsoft, Stephen Reicher, the head of elections for Maricopa County, and they both contribute to PACs, political action committees that work against America First candidates. And then Mitch McConnell sabotaged 8 America First Republican candidates for Senate. And Kevin McCarthy's no better. The head of the RNC, Rona McDaniel, is the same thing. They didn't fund candidates or not funding lawsuits for libel and slander and for also, I hate to say it this way, but for blatant election fraud. Now, having said all that, the biggest danger to American elections is the rhino infestation in Republican leadership positions. And yet some Republicans win because they're not America First. And I'm hearing kind of the same tone in Brazil. I'm hearing the same strategy.
And I just like to throw in my two cents on top of that to reiterate. First of them, in my book, is Greg Abbott. Because in the event of any success, he intends to absolutely scuttle the ship and run the secession effort into the ground, even as he is tooting his horn. He has been in the news in the last 48 hours for declaring insurrection laws and invasion laws of both the U.S. Constitution and the Texas Constitution, activating the state militia and or, if you read the articles, they mention militia and they mention the state guard. There is a state, Texas state guard.
I reported on this, yep.
Okay, he intends to use all those to stop migration and things at the border, when actually what stopped it is his good friend, Francisco Garcia Cabeza de Vaca, getting voted out of office, and his lackey getting voted out of office in the new governor in Tamaulipas State. So Greg Abbott's also supposedly reaching out to the New Mexico governor and the Arizona governor to make a multi-state coalition to secure the border and fight trafficking. And it is all lies. It's all lies. I'm here. I see it. It's all lies.
Well, the governor-elect, Katie Hobbs, tried to do sanctuary state for Arizona. She was in the state Senate. So I do agree. I could see her partnering. I see her being the cartel governor. I'm getting reports, and Sheriff Mack, in some ways, confirmed this when I interviewed him today, that the cartel is making inroads to law enforcement across the southern border. Not all, but some. And what's interesting about that is you're talking about the political climate now exists for the cartels, because you said DeBaca, total cartel guy, former governor of that state that borders Texas. And these people will stop at nothing. They are invading America. They're killing American kids with fentanyl. But the one of the biggest crimes is the infestation that they're posing to American law enforcement. And Sam, I know what's happening. I've been told by too many people.
Yes, sir. That is what's going on. And so this is the counterpunch. This is the Empire Strikes Back, is the rhinos melding and fortifying their lassos, their ties with the Democrat deep state and the rhino turncoats. And this has really hurt Bolsonaro's momentum. This is why Bolsonaro did not declare insurrection immediately, because on election day, so many of his close friends and allies jumped ship and ran to Lula. And what that also
Lula,
means,
this is so people know, is Lula, the, Lula is the guy who is Bolsonaro's opponent running in Brazil. Okay, just so people know. Okay.
The condemned twice ex-president of Brazil, who was sentenced to 20 years in prison for corruption and graft, whose successor, Dilma Rousseff, his handpicked successor, was impeached. And then Michel Temer took the presidency, which nobody really liked him. And so it was in that moment of weakness that Bolsonaro came in with help from the military to cut down election fraud, and maybe also from the Russians, maybe won the election as the tropical Trump. Praise God. Michel Temer and all the Supreme Court justices from Brazil have been in New York this week plotting. Why are they going to another country to plot the future of their country if it's not a coup? It is a coup. And
yeah, it is a coup.
Bolsonaro lost a lot of momentum in his counter coup by these turncoats. And just like Benedict Arnold was supposed to be, he was over Fort Ticonderoga. It was so important that he guard that strategic waterway, which was the gateway to Canada, where there were many British troops. And he was supposed to be guarding his sector with his administration of the famous Fort Ticonderoga, and he just gave it to the British and joined their side. So many Benedict Arnolds have presented themselves in both the United States and in Brazil, and that's why Bolsonaro's declared intent to immediately fight a corrupt election defeat did not happen. But it could still happen.
Well, that's why I want to go back to what I said about the military. Did you see the comments they made about the voting machines?
I have not seen the news in the past 6 hours.
Well, this isn't 6 hours. This is probably more like 5 or 6 days. But the military in Brazil said quite clearly that there were problems with the voting machines and it would lead one to doubt the results. I'm paraphrasing, but that's effectively what they said.
There was a statement made by a key Brazilian general, I believe retired, and I don't have those documents on my desk here, but this was moving up on 100,000 likes, shares, and retweets on Twitter. His letter, I actually retweeted it on my Twitter, so you can search Gospel Gunslingers on Twitter, and if you go to my tweets and replies, I tell in English what he said. I may actually be able to find that, Dave. But he said that the news blackout in Brazil is equivalent to a modern Iron Curtain and Berlin Wall. And so there are rumblings. There are rumblings. I can't tell which way they're going to go, but I hope and pray that these people fight for their nation.
Well, what do you think that there's going to be a counter coup because of the, well, let me put it this way. I think there already is, but it's being suppressed in the media because in Brazil, I'm sure you know this, if you speak out on Twitter, Facebook, or anything else, they are canceling your account and they're making it a criminal offense.
It is sedition, just like here in the United States. It's sedition. You know, I've been reaching out to Myra Flores, who was gerrymandered out of her seat that she won in a special election, right in the Rio Grande. And you know, she's got a pension now as a former congresswoman. And I'm saying, hey, Myra, you're a media darling. Come help us rebuild conservative journalism for Mexico. Come on. And then when it's time for you to run again, then you can run again. But right now, be the Latina voice. Okay, so this is General V.S. Boas. And here's my tweet. I'll just read this to you. In English, the general, far from being a fanboy or Bolsonaro lackey, says the millions of protesters requesting military intervention against Lula partisans are absolutely peaceful, and the news blackout of them, a modern Iron Curtain or Berlin Wall. So that's a translation directly from his letter. And this, I'm going to just look how much activity his tweet has. 151,000 hearts, 41,000 retweets, 19,900 likes at present. But see, none of it's in English, so who would know?
If there were a civil war in Brazil, would you expect Chinese to put troops on the ground?
I expect the place is full of sleepers, to include the many, many criminal gangs. Bolsonaro did like Colonel Jackson. There wasn't near as many as there was a while ago. Fired their guns and the British kept a coming, but there wasn't near as many as there was a while ago. Bolsonaro, during his presidency, really moved into the favelas. He actually trained sniper teams where that when they moved into the favelas, they could have sniper overwatch just for lethal force to even go into these neighborhoods that are full of, you know, red light districts and drug dens and just complete corrupt barricaded neighborhoods that are controlled by criminal gangs, real criminal gangs that are into extortion and drugs and human trafficking, et cetera. So he cut down on them. But that, this is a massive well of sleeper cells, and they're all for Lula, Lula da Silva. And this is something that, that has been discussed in other tweets. Why do all the criminals and the drug traffickers and all these tattooed monsters on the streets, professional outlaws, why do all of them, why are they all celebrating Lula's so-called victory? Well, because they're on his side. So those are just the sleeper cells that are domestic. And then you have multinational, you have external foreign threats. And remember that the Foro Sao Paulo, the Sao Paulo Forum or group, was the group that was working to make other nations socialist under this glory days of two terms of Lula da Silva and two terms of Dilma Rousseff, basically going back to...
Yeah, that gets back into the weeds, though, and I don't think people are going to follow that as well. What my audience has really wanted to know, Sam, is how close is the military to acting? And their statements would appear that they did, but it's been almost a week. So I'm questioning whether or not they will. And are they fearful of the Chinese? See, that's another thing that I suspect, too. I talked to one of my military sources on this, and he said, if the military moves, they'll be crushed by Chinese air power. I said, what do you mean? He goes, Dave, in those jungles, he goes, they have airports that are hidden from view, and all they got to do is remove the foliage, and off they go. And I said, you're kidding. So he felt that Chinese have what amounts to an invasion and occupation force in Brazil enough to subvert any military uprising. So that's just what I'm getting on the other end. Let me ask you this question, okay? You got gospel gunslingers, right? You're a refugee from America to Mexico. Tell us about your organization and how people can become a part of it.
All right. We really need that, guys. Even in my contracting work, where I paid for my own ministry trips for years, November and December, everybody is hiding in their under their covers, and they're thinking about Christmas presents and the end of the year and their end of the year taxes. And we were, as contractors, left out in the cold during that time. And more so, when I rely on donations, it's very easy to forget at this time that there are people out on the cutting edge fighting for freedom, and we have got to make ends meet. I have a new worldwide radio show on 200,000 watt transmitters. It goes all the way through South America and probably to Antarctica.
Awesome,
radio,
awesome.
Internet. But I've got to pay for every minute that I'm on it, and I really need people to step up right now and help me. You can go to gospelgunslingers.com and do that. And listen, I looked for someone else that I could help to be the original refugee and to make a presidential claim, not just to stand in line with the Haitians, not to get arrested by immigration and then be processed. No, to make a claim to the president of Mexico, whom I see as the leader of the free world, at least in the Americas. And so no one else would or could do it. And so in the end, when my sheriff came for my guns in my own hometown of Iowa, at that point, I decided, hey, we take the gloves off. I can't come home anymore without being ready to defend my life with gunfire.
Yeah, exactly. And, I hear you. I hear you, Sam. I know how dire this has been. But what people don't realize is what goes on south of the border is going to blow back our direction. And Biden is looking for communist allies in South America that one day could cross our border with bad intentions. And yes, I said Biden. He's a traitor. He works for China. It's time that we owned up and we said it. Sam, tell people how they can help you. Where can they send the donations?
Go to gospelgunslingers.com. I have a mailing address on there. I've got a couple different donate buttons that you can hit. I'm very easy to find. or you can search Gospel Gunslingers on any search engine. And at this point, it will go right to me. And just to clearly and directly answer your question about air power being stationed, right next door to Brazil is Argentina, where now they're 3 years into power, the communist government again, that is thick as thieves with China. It's only China that is...
That makes sense. And that's a good note to end on, because, folks, you think Red Dawn's just a movie? Pay attention. Sam, thanks for joining us, my friend. Always a pleasure having you on.
God bless you, Dave. Thanks for your work.